You're listening to PodTech.net. I'm Michael Johnson. On this podcast, a talk with Forrester Research Vice President Josh Bernoff, focusing on the future of online video and the changing role of broadcast networks. I spoke with Bernoff at the Forrester Consumer Forum Conference 2006 in Chicago, and I began by asking him how the traditional broadcast companies will fare in the near future, given the popularity of user-generated video sites like YouTube.
Well, if you look at the big networks, they have a serious problem. They've been losing audience for quite a long time, but now they're actually starting to see dollars that used to go to network advertising moving over to the internet. The real turning point was last year when ABC started to put its shows on iTunes, and there's been a complete shift in the last 18 months. Now networks see themselves as multi-channel providers, and they're delivering their video not just in the traditional way, but through video on demand, through internet streaming, through paid downloads, and really trying to reach people with that content wherever those people might be interested in consuming it.
How successful do you think it's going to be? I mean, I know that I personally have watched, you know, an episode of Lost stream, so that's obviously reaching me, who, you know, I'd say kind of a late adapter of these technologies and whatnot. But how successful do you think they're going to be?
Well, for now, the amount of revenue that's generated by these activities is relatively low. But if you look at NBC in particular, which is in a very difficult position now, being a network that's ratings challenged, you're starting to see they put a huge effort behind this. Now, the challenge is that internet video is characterized by the desire for short clips and lots of them, whereas their expertise in the network business is in 40-minute or 25-minute television shows, of which they only have a few. But I think with the development of channels like InnerTube from CBS, you are going to see a lot of activity here. And the idea that consumers would go to the big networks to get quality video is certainly seems reasonable. So I think they will, the share of the television business or the video business that goes to the big networks will continue to decrease, as there's everything from YouTube to thousands of internet independent videos available on sites from Atom Films to Rever. But I think that, you know, if you look at what a network is 5 years from now, it will be a multi-channel deliverer of video. It'll be a brand for quality video, not so much something that you tune into at 9 o'clock on Sunday night to see a specific program.
Now, with the emergence, also we have Revision now. Revision 3, I think, from the folks at Digg.com. Where do you see that kind of thing? Because I know it's kind of an, you know, this is an interesting push from social media to online, and they're offering video on a regular basis. How much do you see maybe consumer-generated stuff figuring in the future?
Well, the real important dynamic here is two things. First of all, technology means now that the ability to produce video and edit it is in the hands of anybody who can get their hands on a relatively inexpensive video camera. In fact, if you look at Yahoo's recent acquisition that they made, you now can upload video to the internet and edit it there instead of actually having a video editing product on your desktop. The other big technology change is that video streaming is cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So this means a surge of content. If you think of a pyramid, sort of, at the top is very high quality video that costs millions of dollars an hour to produce. That's what's on network television. What's at the bottom of the pyramid, this random user generated content, that's the explosion. And we're now in a position where people who would never have thought of themselves as video auteurs are producing all this content. So it's just a much broader collection, a lot more choices for consumers to watch than were ever available before.
Do you think this marriage, if you will, of social media and the larger networks is going to kind of continue? Maybe at Fox, who now has MySpace, which they, compared to YouTube, they got it for a pretty good price. And do you see that trend continuing?
Well, I'd see it continuing, except that the available, really popular social sites are starting to be pretty limited. The key here is that, you know, I mean, I think the networks recognize, or the big media companies recognize, that the internet was an important area to compete in. And now, if you talk about big media companies, you have to include companies like Yahoo and Google alongside traditional companies like AOL, Time Warner. What's become clear is that that's not enough. There are these social networks, these social platforms, that they're very engaging, especially for young people. And if you want to reach those young people, you have to get into that space. The challenge is that the game is almost over here, that there are not a whole lot of these destinations left that have a whole lot of value. I mean, you look, Sony, which is a media company, acquired Grouper. Well, Grouper wasn't that big, and you know, I'm not sure that Grouper by itself is a sufficient platform for Sony to make a difference. And you know, with the exception of Facebook, there's not that many of those properties out there that have gotten to a level of participation that they'd be attractive to a company that makes its business from selling to tens of millions of people.
What do you think that the networks are going to have to do, again, the media networks, the major media networks, are going to have to do to stay, I think, fresh in the game? Because I know that at least I talked to the guy from Fox not too long ago who kind of supervises MySpace, and you know, they're sort of looking at different models, rolling out some of their programs there as well. But what are they going to have to be thinking about as they sort of go forward, given that, you know, they're losing audience share?
Well, let me draw a contrast for you here. Think about a movie like Batman Begins, for example. Well, that's not just a movie. It's movies, there's games, there's you know, websites devoted to it. A movie is a property that stands by itself, but it's also a brand that can have a sort of whole halo around it of all sorts of other media properties. And if you look at television shows, though, they tend to be still thought of as, you know, this is on at 9 o'clock on Monday night. So in order for the networks to really make this transition, they need to recognize that their products, their video, is going to be consumed at different times of day through video on demand, through digital video recorders, through streaming, through downloads. But beyond that, there has to be a whole, surround that with a whole cloud of fan sites, social networks, games, you know, auxiliary video that never got onto the TV, you know, animated episodes. If you start to think of television shows as being more like movies, as a media property that has this whole surround of other stuff, then you begin to see what a network is going to look like in the future. It's about media brands, not about broadcasting.
But it's kind of like the packaging of a DVD, just the way you're describing that there.
Yeah, I mean, what's the difference between a movie and a DVD? Well, there's this cloud of other content that is relatively inexpensive to produce once the expensive movie is produced. It might add 10% to the cost. Well, that's how TV has to think of itself. It has to create that cloud of content around CSI or Studio 60 or Lost, which turns it from a once-a-week 40-minute experience into a real, actual surrounding media phenomenon, a media brand.
I mean, who do you think has been successful at it, at that sort of currently? And maybe an example of something that's sort of stepping beyond the traditional broadcast model.
You know, I'll tell you who's been successful at it. If you're talking at big media brands, look at American Idol. Okay, it's an interactive experience. The web experience is extensive. There's a whole lot of gossip around it. There's outtakes. There's music clips. There's ringtones. And it's interesting. Part of the reason for this is because a reality show has no back end. It doesn't have a whole lot of syndication value. So they say, well, how can we make more money from this? They can't, you know, get it run on some cable channel later. Everybody knows who won, so they have to come up with these other alternatives. But there's no reason why that same kind of thing couldn't be done with scripted entertainment. Now, it's important to point out here that the cable channels have already made this transition to a great extent. So if you look at Discovery, or if you look at Home and Garden Television, and their websites and their downloads and so on, they are milking the heck out of that content. They've got it in all of these different formats, and that's because they recognize there's only so much they can make with that original broadcast. It's only the big networks that are so focused on what the Nielsen rating is that have been really the slowest to move to this sort of change.
Well, Josh Burnoff, it was great speaking with you. Really fascinating. We hope to hear more from you on PodTech. I'm sure we'll visit you again at some point online. Josh Burnoff is a principal analyst here at Forrester, specializing on television and media networks. Thanks for being with us on the podcast and sharing your thoughts.
So it's great to speak with you.